There are 6 other girls besides myself, and 5 boys who were in my ward. And thank God for that, for I couldn't have gone back by myself. However, I noticed that they all cringed a little, as I do, when the door is clanked shut behind us. While we were walking through, an older woman said it had been peaceful and quiet till now. And the littlest girl turned and said, "Fuck you." I was so surprised, I looked for the ceiling to fall down on her head, but no one seems to pay any attention but me. July 26. The little girl I told you about yesterday is in the room next to mine. She's 13, and she seems constantly on the verge of tears. When I asked her how long she'd been here, she said, "Forever. Simply forever." At dinner time, she walked with me to the place where we eat, and we sat together, not eating, at one of the long tables. The rest of the evening, we were left to wander around the ward with nowhere to go and nothing to do. I desperately want to tell Mom and Dad what it's like here, but I won't. It would only make them worry more. One older woman in the ward is a lecherous alcoholic, and she frightens me. But I'm worried even more for Babby. What's to keep this dirty creature from making passes at us? She made some gestures when we passed her tonight, and I asked Babby if we couldn't do something about her. But Babby just shrugged and said we could report her to the attendant, but that it was better just to ignore her. Then something really weird and terrifying happened. We were sitting in one of the recreation rooms, watching the others watch us. It was like monkeys watching monkeys. And when I asked Babby if she wouldn't rather talk in my room, she said we weren't allowed to have sex in our rooms, but we could manage it in the storeroom tomorrow. I didn't know what to say. She thought I was trying to seduce her, and I was so stunned I couldn't say anything. Later I tried to explain, but she just started talking about herself as if I wasn't even there. She said she's 13 and that she had been on drugs for 2 years. Her parents were divorced when she was 10, and she was sent to live with her father, who's a contractor and who's remarried. I guess things were all right for a while, but she was jealous of her new mother's children and felt like an outsider, a stranger. Then she began spending more and more time away from home, telling her stepmother that she was having trouble with school and had to go to the library, etc., the usual excuses, when actually she was going to school about only half the time. But she was still bringing home good grades, so her parents didn't seem too interested. Finally, the school called because she was out so much. But she told her father that the school was so big and crowded they didn't know who was there and who wasn't. I don't know why her father believed that one, but I guess he did. It was probably too much trouble not to. Anyway, what really was going on was that Babby had been introduced to drugs by some 32-year-old man she met in a matinee movie. She didn't tell me the details, but I guess he introduced her to drugs and to the life in general. A few months later, he floated away, and she found that it was very easy to meet other men. In fact, at 12, she was already a baby prostitute. She told me all of this so quietly, I felt like ripping my heart out. But even if I'd cried, which I didn't, I don't think she would have noticed. She was so out of it. After she had been on drugs for about a year, her bright-eyed parents began to become suspicious. But even then, they didn't deal with her head-on. They just started asking a lot of questions and bugging her. So she robbed the next van she met at the movies and took a bus to L.A. A friend had told her that it was never any trouble for baby prostitutes to get by, and, according to Babby, the friend was right. On her second day in L.A., she was wandering around and she met a friend, a beautifully dressed woman who took her to a big apartment on Blank Boulevard. When she got there, there were some girls her age in the living room and pills all over the place in candy dishes. Within a half an hour, she was completely stoned. Later, when she came back down, the woman said she could live there and go to school. She said she only had to work for her 2 hours a day, mostly in the afternoons. So the next day she registered in school as the woman's niece and began living as a high-class baby prostitute. The woman had four nieces staying with her while Babby lived there. The chauffeur took them to school and picked them up, and they never saw any of the money they made. Babby said they just sat in the apartment like monkeys most of the time, never really talking and never going anywhere. It sounded so unbelievable that I tried to ask her questions, but she kept right on talking, and she was so sad and distant that I think she was really telling the truth. Besides, after what I've been through, I think I'd believe anything. Isn't that sad? To be in a spot where everything is so unbelievable, you'd believe anything? I think it's sad, dear friend. I really and truly and desperately do. Anyway, after a few weeks, Babby ran away and hitchhiked to San Francisco. But in San Francisco, four guys beat her up and raped her. When she tried to panhandle some money to call home, no one would give her any. She said she would have crawled home and let them chain her in a closet. But when I asked her why she hadn't gone to the police or to a hospital, she just started yelling and spitting on the floor. Later, I guess she finally reached her parents, but by the time they got to San Francisco, she had wandered off with some guy who had set up his own lab to make LSD. They both got mixed up in some communal shit, and eventually she landed here, just like me. Oh, Diary, I'm so grateful I have you, because there's nothing, absolutely nothing, to do in this animal cage. And everyone is so crazy that I know I couldn't exist without you. There's a woman somewhere down the hall who moans and groans and makes unearthly noises. Even putting my sick, broken hands over my ears and the pillow over my head doesn't keep out the horrible gurgling sounds. Will I ever again in my whole life be able to sleep without having to keep my tongue between my teeth to stop the chattering and without having terror flood in upon my mind when I think of this place? It can't be real. I'm still on my bad trip. I must be. I think they're going to bring busloads of school children by tomorrow to feed us peanuts through the bars. July 27. Dear Diary, I truly must have lost my mind, or at least control of it, for I have just tried to pray. I wanted to ask God to help me, but I could utter only words, dark, useless words, which fell on the floor beside me and rolled off into the corners and underneath the bed. I really tried to remember what I should say after, "Now I lay me down to sleep." But they're only words. Useless, artificial, heavy words which have no meaning and no powers. They're like the ravings of the idiotic, spewing woman who is now part of my inmate family. Verbal rantings, useless. Groping, unimportant, with no power and no glory. Sometimes I think death is the only way out of this room. July 29. I was allowed the privilege of going to school today, and here school is a privilege. Nothing could be darker or bleaker or barer than just sitting with nothing to do and millions of endless hours in which to do it. I must have cried in my sleep because this morning my pillow was soggy and wet, and I've been completely exhausted. The junior high kids have two teachers, and we have two. They both seem kind, and most of the kids seem pretty controlled. I guess that's because they're afraid of being sent again to no man's land, a world of wandering and being alone. I guess people can adjust to anything, even to being locked up in an institution. Tonight, when they locked the huge, heavy door, I didn't even feel too terribly depressed, or maybe I'm just cried out. Babby and I sat and talked for a while, and I put up her hair, but all the joy and spontaneity has gone out of life. I'm beginning to drag and merely exist as she does. The other girls on the ward talk and joke and watch TV and sneak into the bathrooms to smoke. But Babby and I are just trying to keep ourselves together. Everybody smokes here, and the halls are filled with fumes and gray circling smoke. There isn't even anywhere for it to go. It seems as trapped and confused as the patients. The attendants all wear heavy clanking keys pinned to their aprons. The constant sound of them jangling together is a continual, depressing reminder. July 30. Tonight, Babby went down to the day room to watch TV, and I am jealous. Will I wind up a hard butch, angry at some child who has given her affection to an old woman with a package of cigarettes to share with her? This can't be. It can't be happening to me. July 31. After school today, we had group therapy in the youth-centered day room. It was very interesting, listening to the kids. I was dying to ask how all the kids had felt when they first came here, but I didn't dare open my mouth. Rosie was upset because she felt the kids were ignoring her, and they all told her why she wasn't easy to be with, because she tried to monopolize people and was always clinging to them and hanging on to them. At first she was angry and swore, but I think before it was over, she understood herself a little better. At least she should have. Then they discussed how others were feeding their own problems, which was interesting. Perhaps the time I'm spending here will actually make me a more capable person. After therapy, Carter, who is the present president of the group, they vote a new one each 6 weeks, sat and talked with me. He told me to feel free to bring my thoughts and angers and fears out in the open to be examined. He told me that clumped inside, they all seemed magnified and distorted out of true proportion. And he also said that when he first came here, he had been scared so badly that for 3 days he literally lost his voice. He physically couldn't talk. He was sent here basically because no one could deal with him. He had been in juvenile halls and reform schools and foster homes so many times he couldn't count them. But the thought of being in a mental hospital really blew his mind. He told me we could get out of group two once we made some progress and proved we were under control. He'd been in group one a couple of times, but always got sent back because of his temper. He also said that in 2 weeks, the group one kids were going on a bus trip to a cave in the mountains, and on a tour through the cave. Oh, I want to go on that trip. I've got to get out of here. I've simply got to. August 1. Today, Mom and Dad came to visit me. They still believe me. And Dad has been to see Jan, and feels that he will soon be able to get her at least to take back the statement that I was trying to sell her drugs. I am so grateful for group therapy. Maybe now I'll get something out of this place, instead of being broken by it. August 2. I had a session with Dr. Miller, and I think he believes me too. He seems delighted that I want to go into social work, and feels there's a great need for people who understand what's going on out there. He suggested that I ask some of the kids here about their backgrounds, which maybe would give me more insight into people. But he warned me not to be shocked at some of the things I should find out. I guess he thinks there are still things in this world that might amaze me. It's a good thing he doesn't know all of my background. At least, I think he doesn't. At first, I felt I would be too shy to ask kids outright to tell me about themselves. But he said if I told the kids why I wanted to know, he was sure they would want to help me. I'm still not sure I want to go prying into other people's lives. I'm not at all sure I'd want to tell them about mine. I guess I would, though, except maybe the very worst parts. I watched TV for a little while tonight, but there are only 6 kids on this ward and 30 older ladies, and since we have to vote on which programs we can see, naturally they win. I think I'd rather read or write anyway. I'm trying to get Babby to read, and maybe she'll get a book from the Youth Center Library tomorrow if I push her. It certainly will help take her mind off things, if she can concentrate. Her social worker is trying to get her into a foster home, but with her background it seems to be difficult, and apparently her parents don't want her anymore. Isn't that sad? August 3. It's been a beautiful, hot, lazy day. We were lying out on the lawn when I got the courage to ask Tom Blank, who is in the men's section of my ward, why he was in. Tom is a handsome, likable, extremely articulate young guy. He's 15, and he's the kind of person people automatically feel comfortable around. He said he came from a solid, comfortable, unbroken home, and in his last year of junior high school, he was voted best-liked kid in his school. I guess I would be voted biggest idiot if they did that kind of thing in our school. Anyway, last spring, he and three of his buddies heard about sniffing glue and thought it sounded exciting, so they bought a couple of tubes and tried it. He said they all blasted and thought it was great. I could tell from his eyes that he still thought it was great. He said they made a lot of noise, yelling and rolling around on the floor, and the kid's dad yelled down and told them to cool it. He didn't even suspect why they were cutting up. He just thought they were scuffling around like they always did. A week later, the same three tried his dad's scotch, but they didn't like it as much, and found it was harder to get than pot and pills. He said what I'd heard before, that parents never miss their diet pills, their tranquilizers, their cold remedies, their pep pills, their sleeping pills, or any of the other things that will supply kids with a jolt when they can't get their hands on anything else. So he started easy. But in 6 months, he said he needed so much money that he had to get a job. So he applied at the most logical place, a drugstore. And it took the manager a fairly long time to figure out what was happening to his pill supply. When he did, he laid Tommy off to save his family embarrassment. Nothing was ever said, and nobody but Tommy and the manager knew what was going on. However, even getting fired was okay with Tommy, because by this time he was into hard drugs and really didn't care very much what happened. A friend had introduced him to smack, and he started pushing at the junior high to keep himself going. Then he ended up here, and in my green opinion, he's still freaked out, for even now he almost has a contact high just talking about drugs. I noticed that Julie, who was sitting fairly close to us, had almost the same reaction. It's sort of like watching someone yawn. You're drawn into it and you start yawning yourself. I'm so grateful I felt nothing, but I almost wish I hadn't asked, because it was really depressing to see that he and Julie can't wait to get out of here and get back on their thing. Oh, I hate it here. The dirty bathroom urine smells. The small barred cages where people are locked up if they get out of line. One old lady who's a firebug is in one of the cages almost all the time. And I can't stand it. The people are the very worst of all. August 4. Today we went swimming. On the way back on the bus, I sat with Margie Ann, who said she doesn't ever want to get out. She said as soon as she gets out, the kids will be right there hassling her head and trying to get her to take off again, and right now she knows she couldn't say no. Then she looked at me and said, "Why don't we take off, just the two of us? I know where we can get a mixed bag in a minute." August 5. Mom and Dad came to visit again today, and they brought me a 10-page letter from Joel. Mom wanted me to read it right away, but I wanted to wait until I was alone. It's very special to me, and I really don't want to share it with anybody but you. Besides, I think I'm a little scared, because Dad told Joel the truth about me, at least as much as he knows. So I think I'll wait until later to open it. Dad also said that he finally got Jan to sign an affidavit saying that I wasn't pushing at the school. Now both she and Dad are trying to get Marcy to retract her statement. Dad says if that happens, he's sure he can get me out of here in no time. I'm afraid to hope, but I can't help it. And the idea of hoping in this most hopeless of all places makes me want to cry. Later. Joel's letter was great. I was really afraid to read it, but now I'm happy that I did. He is the most warm, compassionate, forgiving, loving, most understanding person in the world. And I can't wait for fall when we can be together again. I know I won't have any more drug problems, but I'm such a boob, such an immature, childish, impractical, improbable wishy-washy that I'm really going to have to work to make Joel proud of me. Oh, I wish he were here right now, and I wish I were strong like the rest of my family. I wish, I wish, I wish. August 8. Oh, glorious, marvelous, wonderful, incredible, fantastic day. Day with birds and singing and sunshine and flowers. I can't tell you how happy I am. I'm getting out of here. I'm going home. All the papers will be signed today, and Dad and Mom will come and get me tomorrow. Oh, lifetime away tomorrow. I feel like screaming with joy, but that would probably make them come and lock me up again. Actually, I'm not being fair to this place. As awful as it is, it's better than detention school. Kay said that if she had been sent to detention school, she would have learned every rotten trick in the book. Here, she sticks to the ones she already knows. I guess that's pretty true with all of us. I can't believe I'm really going home. Somebody up there must be pulling for me. Probably dear old Gramps. Later. I couldn't sleep, so I woke up and began thinking about Babby. I really feel guilty that I'm going and she's staying. Maybe when I'm really strong and the nightmare of my life fades a little, we can come back and get her. But I guess that's just being childish. Life doesn't really happen that way, which is too bad. But I can't think about it anymore. August 9. At last. Finally and forever. I'm home. Tim and Alex were so glad to see me that I really felt rotten for having messed up so badly all these months. Then when happiness came up and licked my face and hands, I thought Mother was going to cry. And I was just glad that Gran and Gramps aren't alive to see what's happened. I guess Dad knew how I felt, because he was so loving and dear. Dear, dear Dad, he always knows. And after we had all talked for a while, he suggested that I go up and get some sleep, which was really great because I wanted to be completely alone in my own room, with my own lovely curtains and my own wallpaper and my own bed, and feel my own house all around me with my beautiful, loving family downstairs. I'm so very, very grateful that they don't hate me, because in a lot of ways I hate myself. August 10. Dear Diary, it's 2 a.m., and I've just had the sweetest feeling I've ever had in my life. I tried to pray again. Actually, I was just trying to thank God for getting me out of there and bringing me home, but then I started to think about Jan and Marcy, and for the first time, I really wanted God to help them, too. I really wanted them to get completely well, and not to have to end up in a mental hospital. Oh, please, God, I hope they do get well. Please help them. And help me, too. August 12. Dad has a chance to go back east for 2 weeks to finish a lecture course. Isn't that marvelous? Of course, it isn't marvelous for Dr. Blank, who has had a heart attack, and I really hope he gets better. But anyway, Daddy is going to fill in for him at the last minute, and we're all going to stay in their gorgeous house and everything. Isn't that great? August 14. They only had one double room left in the motel, so Alex and I have one bed, and Mom and Daddy have the other, and Tim has to sleep on the floor because they don't even have any more cots left. He doesn't mind, though. He says it's like camping out. We're drawing lots to see who gets to use the bathroom first. I was last, but that's okay, because I wanted to write in you. Everything would be absolutely perfect if only Joel were here. He's the only good thing missing in our lives. But I guess that would be a little messy, all sharing the same room and bath and us not even married. It might be even more embarrassing if we were, but I wouldn't even let myself think about that. There will absolutely be no more sex in my life until after I have taken a man for better or for worse until death do us part. And then I even think we'll still be together. I just simply can't imagine a just God making people who love each other be single after they get to heaven. Gran and Gramps and Mother and Dad could never possibly be happy unless they were together. I'm sure Gran died because she just couldn't bear being separated. There wasn't a single thing wrong with her, except that she didn't want to go on without Gramps. I wonder if Mom ever even kissed another man besides Dad. Oh, I'm sure she did, because Dad sometimes teases her about Humphrey. But I know she wasn't having sex with Humphrey. I don't think many girls did things like that when Mom and Gran were young. I wish things were still like that. I think it would be much easier to be a virgin, marry someone, and then find out what life is all about. I wonder how it will be for me. It might be great because I'm practically a virgin in the sense that I've never had sex except when I've been stoned. And I'm sure without drugs I'll be scared out of my mind. I just hope I can forget everything that's happened when I finally get married to someone I love. That's a nice secure thought, isn't it? Going to bed with someone you love. It's my turn in the bathroom, so I gotta go. See ya. August 17. Well, we're settled. Daddy starts teaching today, and this afternoon we're going to take a look at the town. It was dark when we drove in, but this neighborhood is incredible. Everything is all lush and green and fragrant. I'm so happy we're here. We're all exhausted, though, because yesterday and the night before, Mom and Dad took turns driving straight through. 2 days and one night of driving put us all a little on edge. And while it was fun and interesting to see parts of the country, we're still glad to be settled. Daddy says we'll take longer to go home, and maybe even go by way of Chicago and stop to see Joel. Wouldn't that be wonderful? I'm afraid to even uncross my fingers to eat or write. August 20. Imagine me at a university tea. And even more startling, imagine me liking it, even though it was a little stuffy. I must be growing up. See ya. August 22. Well, there will be no more exploring for Wonder Woman. Apparently I walked into a giant batch of poison ivy yesterday and really did it to myself. There isn't too much of it around here, but wouldn't you know who'd find it? I'm swollen and red and itching all over, and my eyes are puffed up and almost closed, and I really look great. The doctor came and gave me a shot, but he doesn't sound too encouraging. Yuck. August 24. I didn't know PI was so contagious, but now Alex has gotten it off my clothes or something. She isn't as bad as I am, but she's still itchy and uncomfortable. Some people from the university came to find out where I'd run across the clump so they could go out and kill it. But I don't even know what it looks like. August 27. Hooray! We're going to New York for the weekend. Mom and Tim and Alex and I are taking the train tomorrow, and we won't be back until Monday. Isn't that great? All the stores and everything? I can't wait. My PI is down to pink spots, and I'm sure my makeup can cover that. I hope. We're taking the 7:15 train tomorrow, and Dad says I can buy a lot of new things for school. Hooray! Hooray! August 29. It's so hot and stuffy in Manhattan, I can't believe it. We're fine as long as we stay in the big stores, but when we're out on the street, it's like walking in a furnace. The heat comes up from the sidewalk in great clouds. And I don't know how the people who live there stand it. Joel says it's as bad in Chicago, but I find that hard to believe. Anyway, we spent most of the morning shopping at Bloomingdale's, and then went to a movie at Radio City in the afternoon just to get out of the heat. Taking the subway was the biggest mistake we ever made. It was so jammed with humanity that we were tangled like sauerkraut in a jar and smelled just as bad. One fat old woman was hanging on a strap beside me, and her sleeveless dress exposed the most incredible bird's nest under her arm. It was the smelliest sight I witnessed in my life. I hope Tim didn't see it, or he'll probably be turned off women forever. Tomorrow we're going to the Museum of Modern Art and a couple of other places. I don't think we'll stay late on Sunday, because Mother is as uncomfortable as we are. September 2. We are not going through Chicago after all. They're making staff changes at the university, and Dad has got to get back. He offered to go out of his way and make a quick stop in Chicago, because he didn't want to let me down. But I can't be that immature. Besides, I'll see Joel in just a few weeks, and we're not engaged or anything. I wish we were. September 4. Driving all day and almost all night is really a drag. Dad looks absolutely bug-eyed, and Alex is squirming all over the place. I really wish I could help with the driving. But Dad says absolutely no driving without a license, which I'm going to get as soon as I can. One more billboard and I'm going to lose my mind. September 6. Home at last. Poor Dad has to go over to the university, and I know he's absolutely beat. If I'm as tired as I am at my age, I don't know how he even manages to get one foot in front of the other. Mother's dashing around the house, chipper as a little bird. But I guess that's because she's home, home, home. Oh, what a beautiful, wonderful, divinely lovely word. I'm even beginning to feel pretty good myself. Just a few hours ago, none of us thought we could possibly live for even a few more minutes. Now we're all getting our second wind. Alex has dashed off to Trisha's to pick up Honey and her kittens and happiness, and Tim is puttering around in his stink room, as Alex calls it. And I'm doing what I love most, just enjoying myself in my own lovely room with my books and all my personal possessions. I just can't decide what to do first. Go play my lovely piano, or stay here and curl up with a lovely book, or take a lovely nap. I think the nap is going to win. September 7. I met Fawn Blank at the store today, and she invited me to come over tonight and go swimming in their pool. Isn't that lovely? Maybe I can get back in with the straight kids this year, and then the dopey dopers wouldn't dare bother me. Wouldn't that be perfect? Anyway, Fawn and her sisters all do water ballet, and I'm not a very good swimmer, but she promised to teach me. I hope I don't drown or fall on my head in the shallow end of the pool. September 10. I don't know why I have to be so insecure and frightened. I haven't even known Fawn very long, and yet I'm almost jealous of all her other friends. I think they're prettier and smarter, and that no one really wants me around, which is pretty stupid since they keep inviting me over there all the time. I guess I'm just a jerk. I just hope none of them has heard all the rotten stories that went around about me. I really don't know who Jan and Marcy and all those dopey dopers spoke to, but I hope it wasn't the whole school. Oh, I hope I'm not going to be hurt again. I wonder if all girls are as timid as I am. If I think a boy might ask me out, I'm scared to death he won't. And if he actually does, then I'm afraid to go. Like last night, we were all swimming, and a carload of boys drove up, and Fawn's father, who's really nice, asked them to come in and have some punch. So we all clowned around for a while, and then turned the hose on the patio, and danced on the wet cement. It was fun, and I guess I looked pretty cute because Frank Blank asked me out. Actually, he wanted to take me home, but I wanted to stay and help Fawn clean up. But I guess the truth is I just don't feel myself around boys anymore. Mother says it's just because I feel frightened and unsure again, and I hope she's right. I do hope she's right. September 11. Fawn called up the first thing this morning. She wants to have a party next Friday and invite boys. I'm going over this afternoon to help her plan it, but I really would rather not get involved. Wally asked her out last night, too, and she's going to the movies with him tonight. I sort of wish she wouldn't. I don't know why I worry about her. She's a few months older than I am. But I just think boys are the root of most problems. At least they've been at the root of most of mine, which is probably a big lie. Anyway, this morning I was reading an article on identity and responsibility, and it said that kids who aren't allowed to make any decisions for themselves never grow up, and kids who have to make all the decisions before they're ready never grow either. I don't think I fall into either category, but it's an interesting idea. See ya. September 16. Guess what? Mrs. Blank, my old piano teacher, called, and she wants me to be soloist at her outstanding student recital. She even wants to get the small auditorium at the university and do all the publicity and everything with my picture on the program cover. Of course, she knows about my hands, so it wouldn't be until later on in the fall, but isn't that exciting? I didn't know I was that good. I really and truly and honestly didn't. She wants to meet with my parents some night soon and discuss the whole idea. But frankly, I'm still flying. I can't believe it's true. I mean, I practice every day, and sometimes I sit down and play just for fun, if there isn't anything else to do. But that's mostly because I don't like the tube, especially the stuff Tim and Alex want to watch. And I can't read forever. I really didn't realize I was that good. I wonder if the kids will think it's a stupid thing to do. I certainly don't want to screw things up with them, particularly now when we're starting to develop such a great relationship. I think I'll just wait and talk the whole thing over with Fawn, but I'll wait until after her party. I know that's the first thing on her mind right now. P.S. I got the loveliest of all letters from Joel, and he can't wait to see me. I didn't tell him that that's the way I feel, too, but I'm sure he knows. September 17. Wouldn't you know, I got my period. Now I'll be self-conscious about that, too. I wonder if Mother would be upset if I bought Tampax instead of just plain Kotex. She probably would be, so I guess I'd better not take the chance. But it really does mess things up for tomorrow night. Oh, I guess it really doesn't matter. I can always wear my new plaid pants and my new top. But it really is a drag. Oh, well, there's nothing I can do about it, so I might as well be cheerful. Right? Night. September 18. I looked at the sky this morning and realized that summer is almost gone, which really made me sad because it doesn't seem as though it's been here at all. Oh, I don't want it to be over. I don't want to get old. I have this very silly fear, dear friend, that one day I'll be old without ever having really been young. I wonder if it could happen that quickly, or if I've ruined my life already. Do you think life can get by you without you even seeing it? Cripes, it gives me chills just thinking about it. Later. Boy, am I a dummy. Tomorrow is Dad's birthday, and I had completely forgotten it. Tim and Mom planned an outing just for the family, but I was so wrapped up with Fawn and the rest of the kids that they didn't want to bother me with the details, which shows you who the creep is around this house. Oh, well, there's no point in kicking myself about it. I'll just have to think up something super special for Dad and surprise everyone. See ya. September 19. Mom was right. My premonitions about Fawn's party were completely ridiculous. It was great, great, great. Fawn's parents are really nice, and all the kids there are the really great ones. Jess Blank is going to be next year's student council president, and Tess is the girls' president, and Judy, and just everyone. I remember a year ago thinking they were a bunch of dull squares, but now I just hope they'll give me another chance and not bounce me on my head. I suspect if I were really mature, I would accept the fact that sooner or later someone is going to start talking about my being picked up, even though it was simply ages ago. And then every nice kid's parents will tell them that they shouldn't spend any time with me because I'll ruin their reputation. And every nice kid will wonder what I'm really like inside. And if they hear that I was in a mental hospital, I can just imagine what will go around in their heads and out their mouths. You'd think, with over 900 kids in this school, I could swing from one side to the other. And I can if they'll let me. Oh, I can. Please, please let me. Maybe I should really be honest about it and tell Fawn and her parents. Do you think they would understand? Or would it just embarrass us all? I know sooner or later I've just got to tell Fawn about the hospital. She's already asked me about my hands, and I just don't feel decent about lying to her anymore. I wish I knew what to do. If I had someone who knew how to handle these things, I wouldn't have to sit here in my bed and worry you and myself. They could just say right out, you should do this or that. I'm sure Mother and Dad are even more uncertain about these things than I am. They tried to keep it as quiet as possible, and I'm not sure any of their close friends even know what happened. Why is life so difficult? Why can't we just be ourselves and have everyone accept us the way we are? Why can't I just be me, as I am now, and not have to concentrate and fume and get upset about my past and my future? I hate never knowing whether tomorrow I'm going to have Jan and Lane and Marcy and all the rest on my back. Sometimes I wish I had never been born. I wonder what nice Frank would think if he knew about the real inside me. He'd probably run like a scared rabbit. Or immediately think he could get anything he wanted. And he'd want only one thing. I do wish I could sleep. Isn't it weird how sometimes time goes so fast you can't even keep up with it, like it's been going the last 2 or 3 weeks? Hours and minutes and days and weeks and months merge into one another in a flashing blur. Dad's birthday is today, and tomorrow is mine. 100 years ago, I'd probably have been married by now, and out on a farm somewhere begetting children. I guess I'm lucky things don't happen quite that quickly these days. But in any case, I've got to start behaving and thinking more like an adult. Later. Oh, this afternoon I ran out and got Dad a sleeveless sweater. I'm sure he'll like it because he saw something very similar in Mr. Taylor's window and said that it would be just perfect for the office when he doesn't want to wear a coat. Now I just have to finish the poem, and at least I'll have done something right. I wonder if life is as explosive and confusing to other people. I hope not, because I really wouldn't wish this mess on anyone else. I wonder if they'll include my birthday party with Dad's tonight, or if they'll have a separate one later. 2 birthday cakes in 1 week might make everyone sick. Gee, another birthday. I'll be almost an old woman. At least more than halfway through my teens. It seems only yesterday I was a child. September 20. I barely had my eyes open when Frank called to ask me out for tonight, but I told him I would be busy with my family the whole weekend. He seemed disappointed, but I think he believed me. Anyway, I can smell a whole vat of bacon cooking downstairs, and I'm so hungry I could eat my quilt. See ya. P.S. Dad's birthday was super. Everyone was so close and warm, and we had such a wonderful time, but I'll tell you more about it later. P.P.S. He loved the sweater and my poem. I think he liked the poem especially because I wrote it for him, personally. He even blew his nose when he read it. Later. Everybody's downstairs plotting, and the whole house is filled with mouth-watering fragrances fit for kings and exotic princesses. I wonder what they're doing. Mother and Tim and Alex wouldn't even let me come in the living room. They told me to go right upstairs and take a bath and set my hair and not to come down until I was the most beautiful creature in the world. I don't know how they expect me to manage that, but it'll be fun trying. Later. You will never, ever guess what happened. Joel was here. I knew he was registering late because of his job, but... Well, I still can't believe it. The meanie! He's been here 4 whole days. And he was actually down in the living room when I came home this afternoon wearing my old cutoffs and Daddy's oldest sweatshirt covered with white paint. He said when I dragged up the path, he was almost ready to turn around and go back to Chicago. Thank heavens I changed into my white dress and new sandals. He couldn't believe I was the same person. Tim and Dad laughed and said they'd had to tie him to a chair to make him stay after he saw me the first time. It was a fun, fun night, and I'm sure they were kidding, I hope. Anyway, when Joel saw me, he kissed me right on the lips in front of my whole family and hugged me till I thought my insides and backbone were crunching like potato chips. It was lovely, even though it was a little embarrassing. They had been planning this all summer, and I thought my birthday was just going to be sort of leftovers from Daddy's. Instead of that, it was the nicest one I've ever had. Joel gave me a white enameled friendship ring with little flowers all over it, and I shall wear it until I die. I have it on right now, and it's truly lovely. Mother and Dad gave me the new leather jacket I've been wanting, and Tim gave me a scarf, and Alex made me some peanut brittle, which Daddy and Joel and Tim ate to get even with me for eating most of Dad's on his birthday. Funny little Alex. She can make better peanut brittle than either Mom or me, and she knows it and won't tell us what her secret is. Maybe it's just because she's so sweet and part of her rubs off on the peanuts. I only got to see Joel alone for about 10 minutes when we sat on the porch steps before Dad drove him back to wherever he's staying. I even forgot to ask, we had so much to talk about. But I'm sure he likes me, in a quiet, soft, gentle, permanent, lasting way. We held hands most of the evening, but that didn't mean too much because Alex was hanging on to the other one, and Tim kept trying to drag him off to show him all the things he'd collected over the summer. Well, if I'm going to get up and practice at 6 and face tomorrow, I'd better get some sleep. Besides, I want to dream about lovely today, and how much more lovely every day after today is going to be. September 21. I woke up even before the alarm went off. It's only 5 minutes after 5, and I doubt that anyone else on this block is up. But I'm so wide awake I can barely stand it. Frankly, I think I'm scared witless inside about going back to school. But in my head, I know it's going to be all right, because I have Joel and my new super straight friends, and they'll help me. Besides, I'm much stronger than I used to be. I know I am. I used to think I would get another diary after you're filled, or even that I would keep a diary or journal through my whole life. But now I don't really think I will. Diaries are great when you're young. In fact, you saved my sanity 100,000,000,000 times. But I think when a person gets older, she should be able to discuss her problems and thoughts with other people, instead of just with another part of herself as you have been to me. Don't you agree? I hope so, for you are my dearest friend, and I shall thank you, always, for sharing my tears and heartaches, and my struggles and strifes, and my joys and happinesses. It's all been good in its own special way, I guess. See ya.
The subject of this book died 3 weeks after her decision not to keep another diary. Her parents came home from a movie and found her dead. They called the police and the hospital, but there was nothing anyone could do. Was it an accidental overdose? A premeditated overdose? No one knows. And in some ways that question isn't important. What must be of concern is that she died, and that she was only one of thousands of drug deaths that year.
The End. You've been listening to Go Ask Alice by Anonymous, narrated by Christina Moore. This book is copyrighted 1971 by Simon & Schuster, Incorporated. This recording is copyrighted 1996 by Recorded Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.